This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Charlie Lurie and Michael Koskuna describe Blue Note Records as one of the most visionary and artistically successful bodies of work in the history of the record business. The label was created in 1939, but it became best known for launching what became known as hard bop, with now classic 1950s sessions by Art Blakey, Horace Silver, and Lee Morgan. Blue Note also released important sessions by Thelonious Monk, Bud Powell, Cecil Taylor, Herbie Hancock, Clifford Brown, and Eric Dolphy. The label changed the lives of my guests Charlie Lurie and Michael Koskuna. They met at Blue Note in 1975 when Lurie, then the director of marketing for Blue Note, hired Koskuna to do research in the vaults. In 1982, they created their own reissue label, Mosaic Records, which first established itself by reissuing Blue Note masters which had been languishing in the vaults. Now Koskuna and Lurie have collaborated on a new book featuring the jazz photos of Blue Note co-founder Francis Wolfe. Their book also tells the story of Blue Note Records. This is one of the Blue Note classics, Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers' 1958 recording, Moanin'. People mean by the Blue Note sound?
Well, I think basically the Blue Note sound is something that was born out of a desire by Art Blakey and Horace Silver in 1954 to create a sound in jazz that would appeal to people. It was kind of a low ebb for jazz at the time. There were a lot of people imitating what had been innovations during the bebop era, but there were no ensembles. There were no longer any big bands, and the stars of bebop were no longer around, and there were just throw-together jam sessions. And both Art and Horace felt that they needed to create something that would bring in blues and gospel and bring people back to jazz. So they really constructed something that became known as the Blue Note sound and also as hard bop, which was music that was very visceral and very intelligent at the same time. And Alfred Lion, who was the owner and creator of Blue Note Records, really had a good feeling for soul, but was also a very meticulous person. And he was the kind of person that, in an age when it wasn't being done, would have paid rehearsals and work closely with musicians so that by the time they went into the studio, the improvisations would be fresh, but the ensembles would be precise and the full impact would be carried through.
What else would you say is among Blue Note's most important contributions to the history of recorded jazz?
Well, a great many people as they went along. It was, of course, the first label to record people like Bud Powell and Thelonious Monk and Wynton Kelly. And as they went into the 50s with the Blue Note sound that we just discussed, they were continually discovering and adding new people to the jazz lexicon. Lee Morgan, Wayne Shorter, and into the early 60s, when avant-garde became a force to be dealt with, they were able to pick a lot of the most intelligent people with the most focused and unique concept in music, like Andrew Hill and Gratian Moncour. And they were also able to capture, by their meticulous way of planning and rehearsing before they went in the studio, to get the most spontaneous performance once there. They were able to get probably the most satisfying work out of people that were only briefly on the label, like John Coltrane and Cecil Taylor and other major giants that passed through the label at various times.
How did Blue Note shape your listening?
Mine? Well, Blue Note was the first label that I started to collect when I got into jazz. Initially, I was just buying records that I liked, and somehow along the way, I realized that Blue Note was something I could always trust. The graphics made a Blue Note cover recognizable from 40 yards, and eventually it was the label that I began to trust its judgment, and when I wanted to spend that extra $5, which was a great deal of money in those days, to experiment and learn about a new artist, at least with Blue Note, it was a safe investment because it was going to be something of quality, whether I instantly liked it or not.
Charlie, what about you?
Well, I was born in 1940. I'm a little younger, a little older than Michael. So a lot of my tastes were already formed before I heard my first Blue Note album. I was listening to Benny Goodman and a lot of swing music. And I was a clarinet player myself, so those are the things that helped to shape me and direct my life. But as soon as I heard my first Blue Note album, and I believe it was a Horace Silver, my life changed. I had never heard music of that power and expressiveness before, and that simplicity. And from that point on, I became a convert, if you will, to Blue Note records. And as Michael says, the fact that it was on Blue Note for many people was the same for me. If it came out on Blue Note, I was interested in it. And just to hold those albums, just to look at them, the weight of the vinyl itself and the graphics, the Frank Wolf photos and the liner notes. There was a whole gestalt to the label that was tremendously appealing, and it was like an old friend after a while.
Talk to you both a little bit about what it's like for you to reissue jazz. Let's start with why you formed Mosaic, why you decided to start your own mail-order business reissuing recordings from the past.
We were out of work, Terry.
That's a pretty direct answer.
No, aside from that, though, this is in the pre-CD era. And we're talking 1982,
mm-hmm.
And there was virtually nothing going on in the record industry with regard to jazz reissues, aside from what was going on at Fantasy with the twofers that they were putting out of Prestige and Milestone and Riverside Sessions. There was very, very, very little going on in the business with regard to jazz reissues. And there was a dearth of material in the marketplace. And a lot of great recordings were screaming to be available. There were new people coming along who had great need, great interest, great desire to be able to own this music and to learn from it and to enjoy it. And it just wasn't available.
My guests are Charlie Lurie and Michael Cascuna, authors of the new book, The Blue Note Years, The Jazz Photography of Francis Wolfe. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Michael Cascuna and Charlie Lurie, co-founders of the jazz reissue label Mosaic Records. When you decided to start Mosaic, you had already put in a proposal to Capitol Records to reissue their music from their vaults, which included the Blue Note masters, they declined. And then you decided to start Mosaic yourselves and to start your own program of reissues. When you decided to do that, knowing that you'd have access to the Blue Note vaults through Capitol, why did you decide to go in the direction of box sets? This was in the dawn of the box set era.
Yes, actually, I think in many respects, Mosaic led the way and showed the rest of the industry that box sets were viable. There had been others prior to us, most notably the Miles Davis Chronicle on Prestige. But I think we took it a step further, and our feeling was that we wanted to put out complete bodies of work, that we did not feel that we wanted to release individual compact discs and make decisions about or to do overviews of a career on one or two compact discs and make those kinds of decisions for people, that we felt that our goal would be better served if we were to identify seminal periods in an artist's recording career and explore that in its totality. And that meant sizable releases, anywhere from, in those days, we were just on LP, anywhere from two LPs to six or seven LPs in a set. And the concept dictated the size of it. We did not dictate the size of it. Whatever the body of work amounted to would determine the size of the set.
The first box set that you put out was a Thelonious Monk Blue Note box set. Michael, why was that the first one?
Well, that was the first one because that's really what caused us to think of box sets as a concept and a vehicle for reissues. And the reason was that puttering around the Blue Note vaults, I had found about 30 minutes of unissued Thelonious Monk. The problem with 30 minutes of unissued Thelonious Monk is it's not enough for an LP. And it was that led me in a desperation to get that material out to figure out how to do it. And then I realized the way to do it is to throw everything back in, make it chronological and make it complete. And that's what set us on a course for box sets. It was born out of necessity. The Thelonious Monk set was a very important part of his career, and it had a lot of gems on it, a lot of unissued tunes and a lot of alternate takes.
Why don't you choose something to play for us that hadn't been issued until you brought out that box set?
Well, I think one of the things that I was most intrigued about when I went through the Thelonious Monk vaults was that there was a take of Well, You Needn't that might have been chosen. It was just as good as the master take, except that he played the melody very differently. And had this version been the one that was released on 78, hundreds of or maybe thousands of musicians would be playing this tune very differently right now. And it is a jazz standard. And this is Monk's other concept on Well, You Needn't.
So this Monk recording that we're listening to, this box set, was back in the disc era, in the vinyl era. This was the pre-CD period. You're still doing vinyl as well as CDs now. Why are you still releasing some things on vinyl?
Well, there are still a lot of people that that want vinyl. There are a lot of people that didn't retool for CD. There are a lot of people that don't like the sound of CDs. A lot of people that are very much against digital recording. And I may say there is some truth to that, but a lot of people were turned off by it because so many CDs came on the market initially, and they almost all sounded horrible. They were just junior engineers cranking out the wrong master tape and throwing them on the market in a way that shows the worst side of the record industry. And a lot of people were very, very rightfully turned off to CDs. I think digital recording and CDs is a far more flushed out and viable format right now. But a lot of people prefer vinyl. And a lot of people with very high-end hi-fi sets with tube amplifiers and state-of-the-art turntables much prefer the warmth and the ambience and the overtones that you can get from an analog recording that digital, by definition, shortcuts.
When you started Mosaic in the early 80s, Capitol wasn't interested yet in a jazz reissue program, so you got access to a lot of these recordings for your own series. But since the switchover from vinyl to CDs, I think a lot of companies have realized that they're sitting on really, really important and saleable material in their vaults, and a lot of companies have been reissuing their music onto CD now. How has that affected your ability to put out recordings from the vault?
Well, I suppose we never would be able to get a name like Thelonious Monk or the Jerry Mulligan Pacific Jazz recordings at this point in time. But there's such a wealth of recorded jazz, especially from the end of World War II up to the invasion of the Beatles. It was a very fertile period, and a great deal of recording was being done. And there's a lot of stuff that labels will never, ever get to, and that their distribution companies will not be interested in carrying or maximizing. So there are always concepts that are very important that we can do that just complement what the companies do.
One of your recent box sets features the work of trumpeter Lee Morgan. Tell us what the focus is on this.
Lee Morgan was one of those people that stayed with Blue Note for almost his entire professional life. And whereas a lot of his 60s recordings are things that would be too strong for Mosaic to get, on this particular set that we've just recently put out, we focused on his 50s stuff at a point when he was younger and his records didn't have the popularity that his later material did. Nonetheless, it is some of his best work and some of his most fascinating work. And this set brings to light a very important early part of his career.
Well, Michael Cascuna, Charlie Lorre, thank you both very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
Charlie Lorre and Michael Cascuna collaborated on the new book, The Blue Note Years, The Jazz Photography of Francis Wolfe, which includes their extensive essay on the history of Blue Note. Lorre and Cascuna are the founders of Mosaic Records, a reissue label available only through mail order. Their new box set, the complete Blue Note Lee Morgan 50s Sessions, includes this previously unissued take of Just One of Those Things. This is Fresh Air.